That is the Memorex version of our guest this hour, but we have the real thing live in studio. Saxophone player of great note and no stranger to this area. It's a pleasure to welcome for the first time to WISO, Greg Abate. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Hi, Nikki. Thank you.
You were just about to say that the name of that song is City of Two Fives.
So right.
That has a meaning musically, theoretically.
Right. Musicians and I guess jazz musicians and all musicians would know probably it's the 2 minor 7 5 7 chord. So that's the great progression for jazz, you know. And it's just, I thought I'd write a tune about it, and the tune has all two fives in it.
Oh, yeah, does it?
Yeah. So it's a 2-5 to the one of the chord. So you need to take a little workshop if folks want to come in. And
does that have to do with the circle of fifths?
Yes,
the same
of course.
Thing?
Well, the circle of fifths have the two fives involved in every key. Everything works on the circle of fifths.
Isn't that wonderful? I come from a world of musicianship, but I never really got into the theory of the music.
Oh, so, well, you knew the circle of fifths. That's cool. No one has ever mentioned that to me in
really?
An interview.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm marking that in my radio
diary. Yeah, it's good. I don't like this.
We're in studio with Greg Abate. He is at the Emporium here in Yellow Springs tonight.
Yeah, I love it.
Playing with a trio. Is that right? Who else will be with you?
Well, there's a trio with Lee McKinney on drums.
And, from right here in Yellow Springs.
And then Tim Watson is from Dayton area on bass. And Ben Tweed on piano from Cincinnati.
Wonderful.
Yeah, great trio.
And that gets underway, I think, 6:30 until 10 this evening. Maybe the music starts at 7, maybe, is that right?
Usually it's 7:30 because we get in there and just wait, and place fills up pretty good around 7:15. And I always, because it's not really strictly mandated there, they give me some leeway on, well, when do you want to start? Oh, let's wait for another 10 minutes type thing.
Sure. You know. And it's always a wonderful, warm gathering, nice, just great, great listening room. You are no stranger to this area, but first we should do at least a little name dropping. You, in the early 70s, managed to somehow find your way to Ray Charles. How does a saxophone player find Ray Charles?
Well, I was living in Hollywood because I went out there to try to, I was working with a rhythm and blues soul band, you know, The James Brown, Wilson Pickett era and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I was in one of those type of bands.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And thank you. And I was living with nine musicians.
In one house?
Seven musicians and two non-musicians living
I thought we were going to say seven musicians and two drummers, you know, the big joke.
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah, that's a good one. I love it.
Evan's laughing at that, but that's a house full. So there, you found yourself there.
Yeah, that was in Santa Monica. It was on. It was in West Hollywood. So I would, you know, I was living there, kind of like living off the cuff there with not any money and stuff because I didn't have a gig.
And you went there to make it big.
Well, no,
or make it.
Yeah, just try to keep going.
Yeah,
you know, and do what my passion. I felt, and I didn't have it, so someone was complaining about me smoking everybody's cigarettes and eating the food that I didn't pay for, and it was minimal.
You're
food.
That guy?
Yeah, well, no one had any food. The main stipend food there was like a fajita with butter on it. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. So, well, that's before the days of ramen, so you
Yeah,
had to...
ramen. Yeah, we didn't have that
no.
then.
No.
So I went to the... I was just going down to the local union in Hollywood, 47, local number 47, and they, you know, I bring charge down there, and I thought I was really hot, you know, I was doing stuff coming out of Berklee College of Music, and I had a chart, and they played it, and, you know, no one, I thought I was going to get it, oh, yeah, man, you know, and didn't get that at all. I was like, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to keep going. You know, you got to have that. You can't just stop from negative criticism. You know, you have to take it in stride and then see who's giving it to you. You know, because a lot of criticism helped me become better, and I'm nowhere near thinking that I've done everything I can do.
Yeah, no, not at all. You know, so that was in the early 70s that you somehow, from taking your hot stuff down to the union, that you made this connection with Ray Charles.
Yeah, there was a sign on the bulletin board, Ray Charles Band. New auditions tomorrow in Ray Charles Enterprises on blah, 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 Washington Boulevard. Bring your horn and audition.
Wow.
So I said, I'm going.
I'll
so
be
I
there.
Went there. And so I'm in there reading, and I wasn't a very good reader at school. You know, cause, I mean, I'm a late bloomer.
And you mean sight reading music?
Yeah, sight reading music.
Yeah.
But when I sat in the section, they counted off the tune, and then blah, and I, all of a sudden, someone put a pair of glasses on me. I could see, I could read, and I said, "What's is this me doing this?" So.
How ironic.
Yeah, and then
because Ray Charles is blind and you suddenly were sighted.
Yeah, I could see.
Wow.
Yeah, I could see to read properly, at least good enough. And my sound was good. I had a good sound, and Ray commented on, because he couldn't see who I am, but he could hear, and he asked me, he called me boy. He said, "Hey, boy, who's playing lead alto?" I said, "Greg Abate." He says, "Oh, I like your sound, man. What do you got on there for a mouthpiece?" And I said, "A Brill Hot Lavalier." He says, "Oh, you got to get rid of that."
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Even though I sounded good, he said, "You got to get rid of that." Because it's not really what, you know, it's a loud mouthpiece, but it doesn't have the core and the warmth and the overtones that the mouthpiece I have now, you know, would.
Talk about
it's like a razor cutting thing,
nuance,
but I
subtlety, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I was with a lot of guys that were all, you know, 20 years older than me or more,
mm-hmm.
with a history of being in all the elements of the real jazz world, and, you know, all the stuff you're not supposed to mention on the radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's life, you know that. But you know how to weed your way out of things and find, you know, to not be in that situation, because you know better as
sure.
you get older and mature of things that just a time waste for people.
Yeah, you know? No kidding. You don't ever get that time back.
Yeah. So that's how I got the gig.
What a sweet story. How lovely. And you were with him for just a little stretch. Did you do any recording, or was it all on the road?
I did one recording, and I never heard it. It was an LP that apparently it's like, I can't find it.
We need to didn't get somebody to dig around.
Yeah. I played a few tunes.
Yeah.
Marie was one of them, the famous tune, you know, but... we did a lot of TV things in Europe, you know, and we go all over every country. We go to every country, and we played everywhere in America. I didn't go to South America, but I went to every European country.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we could probably dig you up in some old footage, right?
I guess so.
I guess so.
Yeah.
We're in studio with Greg Abate. He and his it's a four of you quartet.
Yes.
Tonight,
mm-hmm.
Playing at the Emporium here in Yellow Springs. That's right in the heart of the downtown of the village. Again, you know, roughly 7:30, 8:00.
7:30 late. Yeah, probably. Yeah. They play two sets.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, and a wine tasting involved in that as well. It's always a lovely Friday in a great listening room here in Yellow Springs.
Yes.
Greg Abate, this is not your first pony ride in the Miami Valley. You've played Jilly's many, many times. In fact, we're through with Artie Shaw.
Yeah, Artie Shaw Band, like twice, I believe, and once as a leader, like with a quartet. And
Paccia, you remember...
Paccia was good. It was my first time there. Oh, now in Oregon District, you know.
And
at that time, I could see that where I was at Jilly's, and then going over to Howa Music and visiting there.
Oh yeah,
you know?
They moved. They're not in that location anymore. But it was just a legacy music emanator here.
Yeah, it was a huge place.
Yeah,
Lee McKinney was teaching there. And I met Lee through doing the Borders gig, you know, the coffee shop.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, because he was playing drums, and we've been friends since then.
Nice. So. He's from right here in Yellow Springs, Lee McKinney on drums. And we have him, an example of his fine work here, on a tune called Paris Eyes. It is celebrating Larry Young. Let's hear a little bit of that, and we'll be back in studio with Greg Abate.
Okay.
That is a little something from a trio from right here in our neck of the woods, the Street of Dreams Trio, featuring, among others, the drummer who will be on stage with our guest this evening. That's Lee McKinney, playing drums on that tune, Paris Eyes. And he will be playing with Greg Abate, who is live in person here with us in the studio. And Greg, I was pointing out, and we talked a little bit before we went on, that you don't, when it lists the saxophone, you don't just say tenor or soprano. No. You just like the instrument.
Yeah, I like all the saxophones. Actually, I play them all, and they're all different. It's a different feeling on each one. Of course, the sound is different, and that lends itself to different approach on the improvisation because, you know, we're all prone to sound, and like with the sound sort of like dictates what lines I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's in the flute as well.
I notice you don't list, baritone. Is there such a thing as a bass? I mean, the ginormous one is called a bass.
There is a bass.
Yeah.
And there's a contra bass. There's a bigger bass, the one that you don't usually play anywhere but where it's sitting. Yeah.
Kind of like a piano.
And the bass saxes, you can put around, you can play it on a stand and sit down with that one. But the bass, yeah, if you see photos of it, the contra bass, usually there'll be someone on a ladder, at the top of a ladder that you walk up on, and you have to play it from up there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing that.
But the hands are like relatively the same distance, but the thing is massive.
To create that low resonance.
And it doesn't sound that good. It sounds really bad.
It almost sounds like, I always feel like I'm hearing more of the reed in it. It almost has a harmonica-like sound instead of the
contra bass?
Yeah. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's like a vibration of scratchiness, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I went online once and I got the sound of a contra bass saxophone and listened to it. It was too low that you couldn't really decipher the tonality of
right,
it.
Right, right. There's a limit to our ability to hear.
Yeah, soprano. I mean, I don't know if I can explain that the different instrument. Like if I play soprano and I play a certain tune, if I play it on another instrument, if I solo, it will be totally different stylistic. And even though I'm playing it, it sounds different.
It makes sense. It's like a different conduit for each of the sounds.
Yeah, it's really kind of mysterious. But the alto is more of a bebop type of approach. The tenor could be partly that as well, with more of a modern approach, a little bit more angular, you know, if you will. Soprano is more really kind of a modern intervallic thing more than lines, like a bebop thing. And flute is like, you know, just totally melodic each way.
It's like picking the right golf club for the right shot.
That's
in
a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like you. You know, you got some good stuff. You knew the 2/5, so.
Cycle I like
of
you
fifths.
Too.
Thank you.
We're in studio with Greg Abate, who's on stage tonight with his quartet. They'll be getting underway, 7:30, 8-ish. Just a really lovely listening room and a chance to hear some just straight up fine jazz in our Miami Valley. Again, that's right here at the Emporium in Yellow Springs tonight.
I love it.
Yeah,
love
and good wine.
Love it there.
Good music.
Yeah.
That room has a like almost a personality of its own.
It
it's
does.
Like a presence.
And the people that are there, you know, Kurt and everybody.
Kurt and Ruth and the whole crew. I'm just big fans of theirs. Good. Well, I'm glad you found our little enclave here. I know your original exposure was through Cincinnati, radiating out from there. You were, by the way, at Central State last night. Tell us a little bit about what went down there.
Oh, I was working with Hal Melia. He's a great saxophonist and he's a busy guy. He had me in for if I say workshop in England, they say, what, are you bringing some wood in? And I said, no. They say, you must say master class.
Oh.
And I said, well, I don't consider myself a master.
And it seems a little snooty.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit.
So I say jazz workshop.
Right
so that's
on.
What I did with the lab band. And we talked about jazz improvisation and talked to the students, and then we played a concert in the evening. And Hal joined me with my group. Well, he put a group together, and we played a few tunes together. And that was a great day of mingling with the students and talking about music. And I teach at a college part-time, and I realize how hard it is to learn this stuff. I've been doing it so long that I've been learning on the job, you know, doing it.
Sure.
But in
aren't
the beginning,
we all? Always,
yeah. In the beginning, the technique and all the hard work you have to do to be meticulous about accuracy and to play the right notes, because you just can't play any note. You have to play the right note in the harmonic continuity, what key that particular measure is, because all tunes modulate several times in jazz. They don't stay in one key.
Right.
You know, so you got to change keys maybe 12 times.
For heaven's sake.
And make the melody flow through it, like, so it's melodically. And so that's what causes the if you like jazz, the attraction to hear a good player play through the chords, you know.
And through the changes.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's
See, I was just in a rock band. I never had to worry about all that. Mm-hmm. Never did. But yeah. I do like jazz.
That's great.
We're in studio with Greg Abate. I have another one queued up. We're playing from a couple of your discs, one called Motif, and then this one called Road to Forever with the Tim Ray Trio. We've got the tune Farewell Phil Woods queued up. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Phil Woods is one of the most famous and sought after alto players in America and Europe. If you know Phil Woods, he was one of those iconic guys, force of nature, and all us other alto players, you know, you emulate Charlie Parker, right?
Sure.
And Art Pepper and Cannonball Adderley, but he's one of those type guys that came from Charlie Parker, but he was really a master plus. And so we did a couple of albums together. I met Phil in 2013, and we did a recording together. It's not here. And then we did a double recording, a double set with that trio a couple of years ago. And we did some gigs in Cleveland. I picked him up in New York, and we drove to Cleveland. And here I am sitting with my mentor, who I don't even know that well. And we're driving 12, 13 hours to a gig.
It's like perfect and yet terrible all at the same time, right?
Yeah, it was more perfect.
More perfect. Good.
Yeah. And so Phil passed away in 2015, and so this tune is dedicated to Phil Woods.
It's Greg Abate on Excursions. tune written by our guest today, Greg Abate, from his album Road to Forever, an ode to a mentor, an idol of his, Phil Woods. Farewell to Phil Woods by Greg Abate. He's on stage tonight with a quartet playing some fine jazz, a part of the wine tasting gathering that goes on every Friday night at the Emporium here in Yellow Springs. And yeah, you have a lot of great, great stories. How old were you when you picked up your first saxophone? And even before that, what was your very first instrument?
Clarinet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was in fifth grade, 10 years old.
Right on. Mm. And that was through the school, almost surely?
Yeah, I can still remember the cork grease smell.
Cork grease is what you have to put in the mouthpiece, right?
On the cork.
Yeah,
to make it go in smoother, so it would just...
wiggle around.
You know about that.
Evan's in here with us. Yeah.
Music ed?
Music ed?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cork grease smell. It's like grease paint for the theater. Yeah.
Sort of addicting smell. I used to like that.
That was funny.
The best part of the lesson. Open up the case and put the cork grease on.
Aw. It's a multi-sensory, right?
Yeah. The first time I had my clarinet and, you know, I put my thing together without instruction and I had the mouthpiece totally backwards with the reed on the top.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you were able to play it?
No.
No, no.
I said, this doesn't play right. He said, that's because this reed's supposed to be on the bottom.
This doesn't play right.
It's such a trip. Of all the work that went into that thing.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. Well, it was your springboard, your trampoline to saxophone.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Mm-hmm.
You make your home in Rhode Island these days, but you can catch that little Boston, New York on the just a tinge on the edge of your...
That's what I'm told.
Yeah.
When I moved to California, the people really, they have a straight, no accent there. You know, so it was really, everybody would comment on, where are you from, you know?
America.
Yes. But I used to be with when I was at the Ray Charles Band, right? We go through European country customs, and I'd be with the older cats, you know, and I would always tell the customs, they asked me, where you're from, and I said it only a couple of times. I said, I'm from Earth.
Oh.
And
I bet they didn't think
they
that was
like
funny,
that.
Although it's
and
really
so
good.
The guys in the back,
stop
don't
it,
do that.
Greg.
Yeah.
Quit it.
You'll say, well, what about you guys? When we left Hawaii and you wouldn't relinquish your whiskey bottles to the airline hostesses, and we had to sit on the runway for like an hour.
Did they finally relinquish their whiskey bottles?
Yeah, they did.
What band was that with?
Ray Charles.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a memorable Ray Charles moment other than the fact that he recognized the inferiority of your mouthpiece? What was one of the shining times?
Oh, well, playing at Carnegie Hall.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, and we went there, and I just got off the flight. We had rehearsal, which I had the dry heaves because I was totally allergic to flying, and I would always get sick.
Oh.
I get motion sickness pretty bad.
Okay.
You know, I don't get it anymore. But it was there, and I had to keep going to the bathroom because I was sick.
Oh, my.
But then when the performance came on, I was feeling better, but I had that, you know, sickness. But I used to get the goosebumps playing in the section, especially when he sang certain tunes. And he'd be like maybe 3 feet away from the sax section, so I could really see him sweating and playing. And, you know, I used to feel a sort of a vibe from him that was like not human at times.
Oh.
You know, that's just the music, though. You know, I know he's just a human being, but, you know, that was important. But he always had these quirky things like saying, well, yeah, Greg, you know, we'll have a good day today if it don't rain. I don't really care if I can see. Feeling is what I do. I like to feel, and that's it. And so I tried to come home once from Japan because I was missing my girlfriend. And a lot of other guys were getting fired because they would do something weird on the bandstand in Japan. Like, with this trumpet player would play extended solos.
Oh.
And,
fired for
and Ray,
too
yeah,
long
well,
a
he
solo.
Was supposed to play only like one chorus, but he would do a Miles Davis imitation, like, and try to be there. But the stage manager would tell Ray, and he got on. They flew him home.
Wow.
And they flew a drummer home from Italy once. And I said, gee, you know, I you know, I want to get home, so I tried to do something to get fired.
Oh. Okay.
Young and foolish, you know?
Well, I guess
like, really, you know, I see some of my students at Rhode Island College, they do things that I say, oh my God, man, you got to, you know, you'll find out that it's really crazy when you get older. You'll think, oh, I did that. Holy cow.
Uh-huh.
I said, but, you know, that's the thing about being a teacher, too. You see things in yourself from other students.
Right.
And so you know right away what's going on.
Well, what did you do?
Well, I was burning my reeds on the bandstand, you know, so the road manager told
me. Setting them afire.
Yeah. So I went back to the hotel, and then I got a call in my room that said, Mr. Charles wants to see you in his suite. I said, oh, okay,
yay.
Going up. So I go up there and ring the bell, and the guy, maitre d' opens the door and says, come on in, Greg. Mr. Charles waiting for you. So I see Ray coming. He's got his glasses on with a red bathrobe.
Oh, wow.
He's walking
yeah.
down the hall.
What an image, yeah.
Yeah. And he says, Greg, you know, you got to get paycheck happy. He says, you know, going home. I'm not saying, said, and I'm going to give you $50 more a week. You're going to stay here and I'm not going home. How's that?
So you didn't get to go see your girlfriend?
No.
Which is probably a good thing. Yeah. Paycheck happy.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing.
Paycheck is a good name for a tune.
It is, isn't it? You should write that.
Oh, man.
You got an album coming out, you say, at the end of April?
Yes, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it's titled Gratitude.
Right on.
It's got those guys on it.
These are the same crew.
John Lockwood and Tim Ray and Mark Walker. It's a good one. It's all originals, though. But I got some Joe Henderson, not all original. And I've got a Roland Kirk tune on it. And the other tunes are all original. And it's... dedicated to my brother who just passed away in November.
Mm.
Yeah.
To whom you're grateful.
Yeah. Mm. I'm grateful to be able to do this, but I'm not grateful for him going. But,
no.
But great. It's a grateful for being healthy and to be to know that I've got my family, grateful for that, and life, you know, because I feel the vibes, you know.
Yeah. Me too. Me too.
Yeah,
we're in studio with Greg Abate, saxophone player extraordinaire, a part of a quartet performing tonight at the Emporium here in Yellow Springs. Yeah?
Yes. Well, I wanted to say that when for that Paris tune that you played before,
yeah.
Lee McKinney on drums, you know, on vibes was Dick Sisto.
Okay.
And John Estrelman on the organ.
Great, yeah, great.
It's a nice thing.
And they'll... be with you tonight.
Oh, no, not them.
Lee will.
You will.
I will.
You come in?
I might.
All right.
You can find out more if you search Greg Abate. He has a nice Wikipedia page. Or you could just, even better yet, find yourself on stage tonight. Did somebody do that for you?
No, thank you, John.
Oh, you're welcome, John. Tell the Mel story.
Oh, Mel, you know, I was outside with you just a little while ago,
yeah.
You know. And I was outside with Nikki, and she called this guy John, and he addressed her as John. So I said, what is that? And I said, well, she told me the story.
Right.
And that's, but I lived on Cape Cod in the early 80s, yeah, about in 85, I was touring, I joined the Artie Shaw Band, playing with the revived Artie Shaw Band.
Wonderful.
I was playing tenor. Artie was very, you know, he was the greatest clarinet player, I thought, and Benny Goodman, but he, we were doing a concert at the Hollywood Bowl with Mel Torme.
Mel Torme, who
yeah.
is really an amazing musical
yeah.
entity. Yeah,
he was a nice man too.
I'll bet.
Got to play with a lot of vocalists, you know, Vic Damone, Rosemary Clooney,
oh,
Tony Bennett.
From our neck of the woods too, Northern
Kentucky.
We'd
do a week with them, you know, with the Artie Shaw Band, and Artie would be there narrating things. He didn't play, but my mechanic on the Cape was a Mel Torme fan, and like. I sent him a photo or something with me with Mel Torme, but the thing is now his name was Mel, his wife's name was Mel, and my name is Mel. So everybody would say, "Hey Mel, what's happening?"
Nothing.
So,
great,
to
Mel.
To this day, we're all Mels.
Say hello to Mel for me. Yeah.
I will, John.
Greg Abate on stage tonight here in Yellow Springs at the Emporium. A wonderful chance to see some fine, fine, high caliber jazz right here in our neck of the woods. We're going to go out with one called Steppin' Out.
Yes.
Will you tell us a little about it?
Yeah, this is an original tune. It's a contrafact, which means I wrote a melody on already established chord changes. And
Say the word again. It's called what?
A contrafact.
Contrafact. Yeah. Good to learn.
Yeah.
All right.
That means that it's another tune written on top of chord changes that were of another tune.
Okay.
And I chose the Giant Steps changes by John Coltrane.
Right on.
And I was sitting at the piano at my house and I was thinking, I was trying to learn Giant Steps to begin with, you know, because it's always a work to really deal with and to really make music. It's hard to make music with that tune because its structure is really quick, two beats on each chord.
Oh.
But there's only three keys in it, actually, but it's a short tune. You have three different keys. But so I wrote a line on the changes that are my original melody on the changes of Giant Steps.
So does that make it your song then? Or is it so that's an allowable chord changes. It's the melody that really defines the song.
Yeah, chord changes are not you can use chord changes in another tune as the tune, and you can title it another title if the melody is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Harmony is not like copywritten. You can't just copyright chords. And what else?
Did not know that.
Yeah, and a lot of bebop players, like in the the innovators, they used to write tunes like, and they would call it a different tune, and they would get their royalties on it as original tune. And it's not that they couldn't write a whole tune themselves, the chords and melody. I do that myself, is write a whole complete original tune. Which it'll always be like, hints of different things because everything, you have different quotes that come in at times, but
sure.
They could copyright it as the original, and that would make it, because the changes were so interesting.
Sure.
That you're attracted to that harmony, so you want to just, because writing a tune is a slow improvisation, whereas improvising as a solo on a band on a concert is more of a fast improvisation. You're not as cautious. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
As writing, because it's going to be slower melodies per se, so you can make it like a song type thing, and then the melody will be superimposed. I mean, the chords will be improvised upon afterwards, which is really fast improvisation.
It's a wonderful world.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Greg Abate, I like you. Make sure you come back next time you're in
like
our
you
neck
too.
Of the woods, all right?
Yeah, I like it.
Greg
Thank
Abate,
you.
Live tonight at the Emporium. Show gets underway 7:30-ish, part of the wine tasting, every Friday night, right here in our village of Yellow Springs.
Yes.
Thanks, Mel.
Thank you, Mel.